China can do this on its own, or we can take the oil situation into our own hands.
The United States presses China to cut off oil to North Korea, but will it? It's Friday, December 1st, and this is VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Remember, you're a part of the program. Join us on any of our VOA social media platforms. Also ahead, how long will Rex Tillerson be U.S. Secretary of State? Pope Francis calls for international action over the Rohingya crisis, and the Global Entrepreneurship Summit ends in India. That's all on today's VOA Asia. Following North Korea's latest and most advanced missile test to date, the United States has urged China to show leadership and do something it has so far been unwilling to do, cut off Pyongyang's oil supply. Speaking at the United Nations Wednesday evening, U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley said Washington is looking to China's President Xi Jinping to take a stand.
We believe he has an opportunity to do the right thing for the benefit of all countries. China must show leadership and follow through. China can do this on its own, or we can take the oil situation into our own hands.
Speaking here in Washington Thursday, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson applauded Beijing's efforts to curb North Korea's acts of aggression, but said he believed that China can do more, particularly with respect to oil.
I think the Chinese are doing a lot. We do think they could do more with the oil, and we're really asking them to please restrain more of the oil, not cut it off completely. That was the most effective tool the last time the North Koreans came to the table, was cutting the oil off.
Oil has always been a commodity that Beijing has approached with extreme caution, but it is a question that China will have to carefully consider. That's according to Ji Qingkou, a political science professor at Peking University. He said if oil is cut off completely, it could lead to bigger economic problems in North Korea and even political instability. North Korea could turn chaotic. The first thing that China is concerned about when it comes to North Korea is the development of nuclear weapons. The second is how it can avoid any chaos on the peninsula that could lead to war. Meanwhile, China's foreign ministry said Thursday it is still focused on denuclearization and getting all sides back to the negotiating table. Foreign ministry spokesman Gong Shuang said China would continue to do everything possible to help reach that goal and that it would fully implement sanctions already approved by the United Nations. He said China will completely and thoroughly carry out all resolutions regarding North Korea and its international responsibilities. Meanwhile, Russia's foreign minister Sergei Lavrov said that the United States seems to be pushing North Korean leader Kim Jong-un towards a confrontation. He said one gets the impression that everything has been done on purpose to make Kim Jong-un snap and carry out further inadvisable actions. It is regrettable. The Americans should explain to us what they're after. Speaking in Belarus, Lavrov said that sanctions against Pyongyang have not worked, and the United States is making what he called a big mistake in pursuing more of them. Meanwhile, how long will Rex Tillerson remain as the U.S. Secretary of State? Well, several news reports here in Washington Thursday said U.S. President Donald Trump could name Central Intelligence Agency Director Mike Pompeo to replace Tillerson within the next several weeks. Several U.S. news outlets reported that the shakeup of Trump's top national security team has been under consideration for some time now, although it was not clear if the president has made a decision. At the White House Thursday, Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders downplayed the reports and said Tillerson will have no problem doing his job.
Look, I don't know where those stories are coming from. I don't try to spend most of my day figuring that out. I'd rather focus on the points that I know and the points that we're driving through the administration. And the Secretary of State's a pretty tough guy. I think he'll be just fine carrying his job out.
At the State Department, meanwhile, spokeswoman Heather Nauert said that Tillerson continues to do his job despite the flurry of press reports.
The secretary is someone whose feathers don't get ruffled very easily. He kind of, brushed this off today. He's heard these kinds of stories before. These stories have come up through his tenure here at the State Department, and he's just going on about his business.
Tillerson's departure from the State Department would end a troubled tenure for the former ExxonMobil chief executive, who has clashed with President Trump over dealing with the nuclear threat posed by North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un. Reports say under the proposed plan, Arkansas Republican Senator Tom Cotton, a staunch ally of Trump on national security issues, would replace Pompeo at the CIA. Pompeo, a 53-year-old former three-term congressman from the Midwestern state of Kansas, apparently has won Trump's favor while giving him the CIA's daily intelligence briefings in person at the White House, rather than delegating that responsibility to a staff aide. These are among the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. What North Korea's photos say about its latest ballistic missile. North Korean boat with 10 crewmen found drifting off the coast of Japan. In Pakistan, talks are underway with the U.S. to bridge differences on the Afghan war. Anti-Duterte protests staged in the Philippine capital. And China's Xi praises Obama's efforts to build U.S.-China ties. Expanded coverage of these stories and more is on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the VOAnews.com website. You're listening to VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Pope Francis on Thursday called for decisive measures to resolve the political crisis causing mostly Muslim refugees from neighboring Myanmar to flee to Bangladesh. In a speech in Dhaka before Bangladesh's president, the pontiff did not call the Rohingya by name, but spoke of refugees from Rakhine State. He also called on countries to give immediate material assistance to help Bangladesh deal with the crisis. He said, "None of us can fail to be aware of the gravity of the situation, the immense toll of human suffering involved, and the precarious living conditions of so many of our brothers and sisters, a majority of whom are women and children crowded in the refugee camps. It is imperative that the international community take decisive measures to address this grave crisis, not only by working to resolve the political issues that have led to the mass displacement of people, but also by offering immediate material assistance to Bangladesh in its effort to respond effectively to urgent human needs." Meanwhile, Bangladesh's President Abdul Hamid told the gathering that the Pope's position has given the refugees hope. He also called on the international community to do more to help the refugees.
"The very commendable position of Your Holiness, has taken in favor of the distressed Rohingyas and your passionate voice against such brutality raises hope for resolving the crisis. Your closeness to them, your call for helping them, and to ensure their full rights provide moral responsibility to the international community to act with promptness and sincerity."
The exodus of hundreds of thousands of Rohingyas from Rakhine State to Bangladesh was sparked by a military crackdown in response to Rohingya militant attacks on an army base and police posts in August. The UN and the United States have referred to the Myanmar military's response as ethnic cleansing. Happening now in Asia, a coalition of leftist groups gathered in Manila to protest President Rodrigo Duterte's recent suggestions that he will assume sole power of the Pacific archipelago. Duterte has threatened to declare a so-called revolutionary government, which essentially, would cancel the constitution and dissolve the government. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on this Friday. I'm David Byrd in Washington. As refugees resettle in a new country, their identities are often lost in the transition. A photo exhibit in the U.S. Midwestern city of Columbus, Ohio, offers a small window into one local refugee community. VOA's Jun So explored the exhibit that sheds light on the refugees' brave journey from Bhutan through camps in Nepal before finally settling in central Ohio. Carol Pearson narrates her report.
A farmer in Bhutan, Hasta Dittal, saw his neighbors arrested after the government began expelling ethnic Nepalese. When the army came to his house, Dittal escaped through a rear window. Man Chetri remembers celebrating festivals in her small village. After she fled to a refugee camp in Nepal, she made extra money to support her family by weaving traditional Nepali hats like Hasta Dittal's. Sukh Bhattarai was a successful businessman. When all of his partners were arrested and one was killed by the Bhutanese army, Bhattarai left the country, giving up all his assets. Each portrait in the Ohio History Center is accompanied by a personal story. As documentary photographer Tariq Taray captured the images, his partner interviewed the subjects and wrote the narratives.
I wanted to highlight their struggles from their homeland in Bhutan, their journey through Nepal in the refugee camp, and them coming to central Ohio, building their lives back, contributing to society, and making Ohio a vibrant place.
The 20 portraits represent 23,000 Bhutanese Nepali refugees living in central Ohio.
These Bhutanese-Nepali neighbors, they're changing the way that Ohio looks, and there are new businesses. They're now part of Ohio, they're part of Ohio's story, and as the History Center, we find it really important to make sure that we're sharing their stories.
Since 2008, more than 92,000 refugees living in Nepal have been resettled in the U.S. The exhibit enlightens visitors like longtime Columbus resident Jim Gutekunst.
I didn't know their struggle, but I'll read each page that I see just to educate myself, to understand their struggle.
For the refugees, the exhibit is more meaningful.
Everywhere we go, we lose our history. If you go back to Bhutan and just try to find out anything, I doubt there is anything. We stayed in Nepal 20 years as refugees. You hardly find anything archived. It stays as a history so that our children, generation can come see and read about their parents or their grandparents' experience. So I feel very proud of this.
Tara Dungana, who owns a local restaurant, says he tries not to miss Bhutan, where he grew up, but would prefer to respect the country that welcomed him. For producer Jun So, I'm Carol Pearson, VOA News, Columbus, Ohio.
Coming up, we'll hear about the Lamborghini of the future.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This news update from VOA Asia. Days of fierce clashes between the Taliban and Islamic State in eastern Afghanistan are reported to have spilled over to adjoining areas. The fighting erupted earlier this week in Nangarhar province after Islamic State militants assaulted Taliban-held areas. Visit VOA Asia's Facebook page each day for the top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. This year's Global Entrepreneurship Summit ended Thursday in Hyderabad, India. President Donald Trump's daughter Ivanka was one of the featured speakers, talking about women and entrepreneurship. Prime Minister Narendra Modi joined Trump, an informal advisor to her father, in opening the conference, the theme of which was Women First, Prosperity for All. VOA's Michelle Quinn reports on technology, and she attended the conference in India. She told my colleague Sarah Williams about Trump's reception and role at the conference.
I would say that Ivanka Trump was warmly embraced and welcomed by Indian nationals, and this crowd was very excited that she was here. all the way to where she was speaking, the convention center. There were giant posters with her face on it, with a saying maybe that she had. So there seemed to be kind of a following of her and kind of what she represented, both as, you know, an advisor to President Trump and his daughter, but also as a, you know, an entrepreneur.
And what did she speak about?
She talked about many things, but she talked about women and entrepreneurship and the accomplishments that people have, that women particularly have made, both in the United States and in India. So she talked about kind of where things are and, you know, the positives, but she also talked about kind of where things have to go. And some of the things are ways that there are gaps between men and women in both countries. But then she also talked about the friendship and the relationship between the two countries, and said multiple times that this conference and this jointly produced conference was just another step in sealing the friendship and the partnership between the two countries. And my understanding is that, you know, this is part of the of what this is about, was kind of there's a close relationship between India and the United States, but there's also areas of disagreement, and that this was just part of kind of working towards bringing the two countries closer. Both Prime Minister Modi and Ivanka Trump talked about their own country as being kind of the best, the most important, and where manufacturing and where jobs should be created. So they both had like America first or India first. And they were asked multiple times, you know, isn't there a conflict here? How can you be so focused on your own country's success, but also be at a co-host a global event? And they sort of shrugged it off and said there's no conflict here at all.
That's VOA's Michelle Quinn speaking with my colleague, Sarah Williams. This news from VOA Asia. Yemen's Iran-backed Houthi rebels said Thursday they fired a ballistic missile at Saudi Arabia and hit a military target. It was the second such attack this month after the Houthis threatened to retaliate for a crippling blockade. Saudi Arabia and its allies tightened the blockade on Yemen's ports and the international airport in the wake of a November missile attack. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Today is the 30th World AIDS Day, and the United Nations reports remarkable progress in containing the HIV virus. In its latest report, UNAIDS said access to treatment has risen significantly, and the UN's goal is to end the pandemic by 2030. VOA's Carol Pearson spoke to one of the world's leading scientists about whether that can be done.
Since the 1980s, when AIDS was a death sentence, Dr. Anthony Fauci has been working to end the pandemic. Now, he says, we have the tools to do it.
What I mean is that we have extraordinarily effective drugs, but recently those drugs have been shown over the past few years not only to save the lives of the people who take the drugs, but also to bring the level of virus in an infected person so low, below detectable level, that it makes it virtually impossible for that person to transmit the virus to someone else.
Drug therapy is now simplified, and many people in developing countries have access to the most recent drugs. We also have Truvada, a drug that prevents people who don't have HIV from getting it. UNAIDS reports that more than half of all people living with HIV are getting treated. But another 16 million people infected with the virus are not on medication. Many of them don't know they have HIV, so they pass it on to others.
In order to get a durable end to the epidemic, we would be greatly helped by an HIV vaccine.
A vaccine trial in Thailand proved to be 31% effective.
Can you take a deep breath?
Compare that to the measles vaccine, which is 99% effective. Can scientists develop an AIDS vaccine that is that good?
I don't think we're going to get there with an HIV vaccine, but even a vaccine that's 50-55, at the most 60% effective, together with the implementation of the other advances we have, I believe we could turn around the trajectory of the epidemic and essentially end it as we know it.
Another vaccine trial is taking place in South Africa. The results won't be in for a while, and there's no way of telling if it will be good enough to help end AIDS. In the meantime, more people need to get tested and have access to health care. UNAIDS reports that in sub-Saharan Africa, new HIV infections have fallen by half since 2000. But in Eastern Europe and Central Asia, HIV infections have risen 60% over the past several years. Both Fauci and UNAIDS say ending the pandemic is up to the global community and how much effort and money it's willing to commit towards this goal. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
Are you a fan of the Batman movie series, The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises? Well, you, if you are also a car fan, will remember that Bruce Wayne wrecked a Lamborghini in one of those films, smashed it to pieces. But had Bruce had the car you're about to meet, he might not have needed AAA. Terzo Millennio, or Third Millennium, is a brand name in auto design from Lamborghini. And though it's not expected to be for sale for a few weeks, Yevgeny Maslov got a look at the super concept car at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Bob Lavaroni narrates his report.
The development of this engine design of the future was done in collaboration with MIT. The result exceeded the expectations of experts. Terzo Millennio resembles a space shuttle. The car will have an electric power unit where each wheel will be powered by an electric motor. The fuel will be provided by so-called modern supercapacitors. Lamborghini design chief Mitya Borkert presented his model at a gathering of the high-tech elite at MIT's annual M-Tech conference.
So for us it is super exciting to combine Lamborghini as an innovative brand with the, you know, the young mind of the students, and for us that was an exciting motivation. Our mission is here, I think, done, because I have seen already many people have seen the car. Everybody was really excited, a lot of young people, and that was exactly our mission.
One of the unique technologies in the concept model is a self-healing body made of carbon fiber. It allows you to track body damage and create a repair system using nanotechnology. Chips and cracks are automatically filled with a special solution that tightens the defects. And this is only one of the surprises in the Lamborghini of the future.
The idea is we are opening to a laboratory. So one is for innovative materials. For example, when you look at the car, all the exterior shape is a potential energy source of the future. So for example, there's the carbon fiber, and inside of the carbon fiber, there's the nano tubes. So the exterior of the car could be an additional battery. So I think that's super exciting.
The Lamborghini prototype demonstrated a number of revolutionary technologies. In the design of the power unit, supercapacitors and blocks of electric energy accumulation are used to fuel the car. The new supercar operates four electric motors designed along with the battery for energy conservation under the hood.
This is a car that for sure is not arriving tomorrow. It is a car that, you know, we are setting as a goal for the future, and I want to have it as a motivator for the young generation. Wow, I like this supercar.
Terzo Millennio will not be available in auto showrooms for a few years. But the new technology and innovative solutions will be gradually introduced in new Lamborghini models. For Yevgeny Maslov, I'm Bob Leveroni, VOA News.
Maybe you're a Ferrari fan. I remember our former assignments chief, the late Jack Payton, always argued with me over which car was better, the Lamborghini or the Ferrari. Maybe you like the Jaguar. I don't know. Auto preferences are kind of like your favorite wine. You like what you like. But if you want to see the Lamborghini we've been talking about, which, by the way, is outlined in red piping on a black body like the old Batmobile from the Batman series, you can log on to our website. That's voanews.com. You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can download our podcast and take us with you. You can also find us at voanews.com. Let us hear from you, VOA Asia Facebook, and you can email us, voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks also to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Aydin Utku. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Enjoy the rest of your day.